Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The collapse of the American automobile industry at this terrible economic time would be a disaster. It would have very negative consequences far beyond the industry itself.
Well, the lame duck Congress can't just limp to shore. It has crucial decisions to make as the financial crisis rages on. Should they pass the kind of stimulus bill President-elect Obama wants? Should they bail out Detroit, as Congressman Barney Frank, Democrat from Massachusetts, was calling for there? They're even getting a jump on the president-elect with a major health insurance bill. The question is already being asked in Washington, is Congress trying to cooperate with Barack Obama or jump ahead of him to force his hand? And who from our area will make those decisions? Well, more Democrats than ever before. Congressman Vito Fisella's seat in New York City went to the Democrats on Election Day. So did Congressman Christopher Shea's seat from Connecticut. That means the New York metropolitan area, southwest Connecticut through northern New Jersey, say, really has just two Republicans left in the House, Peter King from Long Island and Scott Garrett of New Jersey from Warren County and parts of Sussex, Passaic, and Bergen. Congressman Garrett joins me now to talk about the issues pressing in on this Congress and to preview life in a smaller House majority for the next. Congressman Garrett, thanks for coming on again. Welcome back to WNYC.
I always enjoy being with you. Thank you.
Let's begin with the immediate business. As Congress considers a stimulus package, what do you think New Jersey and our region generally need?
Okay, that's a good question. What we need is to, on a statewide basis, of course, is to get the state's fiscal house in order, and so we can go ahead on a statewide level. Of course, as you know, next year is elections in New Jersey for the governor's race, and so a lot of focus will be on the budget in this state. On a more regional approach, it transcends into Washington. We need to get the fiscal house in order there. And one of the big things, I guess, nationally or macro, I'll close on this, is confidence. Much of the problems that we're having in the economic sphere right now in this country and globally is the lack of confidence. People are sitting on their sidelines, if you will, not knowing how to or when to invest because they're not confident in the market. So that's the bigger picture.
But specifically, yeah. Congress is looking at a bailout bill, and the Democrats, I don't mean a bailout bill, I mean a stimulus package, which the Democrats seem to be building around an extension of unemployment benefits, more food stamps, and more aid to states and localities. Could you vote for a stimulus bill like that?
Well, you appropriately changed the name of it to what they are probably calling it, and that is a stimulus bill. And in reality, this stimulus bill, Stimulus 2, is a lot like Stimulus 1, and that is it will do absolutely nothing to stimulate the economy and get us out of this recession that we are in right now. The economy is down. Unemployment numbers are terrible. You were just reporting on those. Those things that you just mentioned, which are most likely to be in the so-called stimulus bill that will be coming up potentially this week, although I still eagerly wait for Nancy Pelosi to tell us what her game plan is as I sit here on Thursday for next week. None of those things will really drive the market forward and change the dynamics of the economy, unfortunately.
So it may not solve the macro questions. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're claiming that it will. Could you vote for a bill like that? Do you think that those are good things for the people of your district, the people of New Jersey, extension of unemployment benefits? In the meantime, while it doesn't change, you know, the macro picture, more food stamps, more aid to New Jersey specifically and to localities in the state?
Well, that's actually your last word is an interesting one, more aid to New Jersey specifically. And like in the last package that went through, when they do the extension, the money actually would not have gone to New Jersey specifically because our numbers were such that most of the money would go to the other 49 states. And so that's why some of the devil's in the details. We did do a economic, rather a extension unemployment, which I was supportive of in general. Was that a month ago or 2 months ago now?
I guess, yeah.
What else they tag on to this becomes the problem, because if you just keep on adding and adding, then the real question comes to the American middle class, where does my bailout come from and how are we paying for all this?
Is there something in particular that you anticipate the Democrats putting in this stimulus package that you couldn't live with and would make you vote no?
Oh, good question. I don't know. I mean, you may recall about a month ago, I guess, that we had a hearing down in Washington, and at that time, the stimulus package, as they're calling it, was upwards to over $300 billion. And for me, that was a non-starter because, look, we're at today we're at $700 billion in red ink as far as this year's fiscal budget is concerned. This is not a Republican, it's a Democrat, actually, budget, come to think of it. And so they were talking and adding $300 billion to that. So you're looking at a $1 trillion year-long deficit, twice as large as anything in history. What's going to be in their package is anybody's guess. And if it comes down, if history is any prognosticator of the future, if it comes down as the last ones, it will be given to the Congress, Republicans and Democrats alike, next week and say, here it is, vote on it. No amendments, no adjustments, no discussion, no debate, and it's a done deal.
And then you'd vote
that's
no.
That's a non-starter.
Yeah. Well, elsewhere in bailout world, you voted against the original $700 billion bailout bill.
Yeah.
Do you feel any more inclined to support the $25 billion loan for the auto industry that's being considered?
Well, it's interesting. On the original bailout bill, as you know, I was one that said what Secretary Paulson and the bill that came through the House was not the right way to go. President Bush and Nancy Pelosi and everybody else said, yes. And I'm sure you saw in the news, well, you probably reported on it, yesterday, Secretary Paulson said, guess what? We're not doing it now. We're going in a totally different direction, which is what a lot of us were saying he should have done a month ago. The auto bailout bill is likewise the same framework. Congress did pass, as you know, $25 billion to help restructure the auto industry in this country to go to more fuel-efficient, environmentally friendly cars and so on. That's already done. They can have that money. Now they're coming in with another $25 or $50 billion and saying we need to pay for their operating expenses. And no analyst on Wall Street or anyplace else says they're going to do anything except burn through that money real quick. So
that would be a no.
That would be a no, yeah.
Here is Sander Levin, congressman from Michigan, talking about the urgency here as he sees it.
There's an urgency here, and it can't wait for an Obama administration. The president-elect has said that the auto industry is the backbone of manufacturing in this country, and we have to make sure that that backbone isn't splintered the next couple of months before there's a new administration.
Now, Sander Levin is a Democrat from Michigan, which is the state directly affected, obviously most directly affected. But the argument that he and a lot of other people are making is that the ripple effect out into the additional jobs lost would be so great because this is such a huge part of the economy that it's worth it to try to keep them from going bankrupt or maybe even keeping them from going out of business. Why not?
Well, look at his first word. He says there's an urgency that we do this even before the Obama administration comes in. I would question him on the facts there. All the analysts who look at this say, look, there's $25 billion in loans that are outstanding that is in law right now that they haven't even received yet. Let's get that off the table and flowing into there. The analysts also say that, generally speaking, these companies are well enough, not great, but they can hold their own through the end of 2009. So why he feels the need that we have to do this next week in November of this year, no one has shown any information to that effect. And my guess is no one will have the opportunity to make that case because, as I said, I bet you anything there's not going to be much of a hearing or discussion on this.
Republican Congressman Scott Garrett of New Jersey, my guest on WNYC. And before I ask you about the future of the party, which all the Republicans seem to be talking about in the media right now, to stay on the bailout for just a second,
sure.
As an opponent, again, of the original bailout,
right.
What did you think of Treasury Secretary Paulson's speech yesterday announcing its restructuring, not to simply infuse capital into the banks anymore because they were still refusing to lend, and not to buy the toxic mortgage debts anymore
right.
because that turned out to be too complicated, he says, but to help lenders and borrowers in a new program designed to get credit moving again?
Well, that was interesting. I mean, as you know, I was one who said on day one, the financial markets the financial situation in this country globally as well are in shambles and something needed to be done urgently, immediately, back when the Congress was still in session. What I was also saying, though, was what the Secretary was proposing was not the right way to go. His statement now yesterday confirms exactly what a number of us were saying back then, that it was not the right way to go. We should have been doing this a month ago, and it goes back to my opening comments. If we had done that, we would have immediately came out and instilled confidence in the marketplace back then, and perhaps you and I would not be having this discussion
yeah.
as we are today.
All right. I'm going to play a clip here of Republican Congressman Mike Pence of Indiana on Fox News Sunday this week, anticipating being in an even smaller minority come January. As you know, the Republicans lost more than 20 seats, and this is going to be the biggest House majority. Well, it's going to be a bigger House majority for the Democrats next year than any majority that the Republicans had in their 12 years in control from 94 to 06. Here's what Mike Pence said about approaching that.
Look, you know, I'm a conservative, but I'm not in a bad mood about it, Chris. The purpose of the opposition is to oppose. Having dealt with the Democrats on Capitol Hill knowing the policies of the president-elect, we're going to have some pretty vigorous disagreements, and they're going to be along traditional fault lines, and we're going to cheerfully provide that loyal opposition.
So that's how Mike Pence is approaching it. How are you going to approach being the loyal opposition?
I guess, I don't know whether oppose is the right word. I think I look at it as working to get things done. Look, I'm optimistic in going back, optimistic that a number of the things that our president-elect wants to do can actually get accomplished in a positive manner that actually helps the economy, the healthcare system, and so on. You know, if he can get half of those things done, because politics being what they are, and that it benefits the country, fantastic. Our role in the minority is to say, okay, here's your idea, here are some ideas that we have, let's work in this in a bipartisan manner to get it through the committee process, get it to the floor, and get some of these things done.
What do you think about the election of Barack Obama?
Well, I will admit he was not the candidate that I voted for. But I think what the message that he comes across with and sends to this country and the world as well is a good one, in the sense that we do need a change in so many aspects of our country, the economy, and in politics, and the nature of politics and the like. And if he can be that voice to get that done now over the next 4 years, great for the country, great for the families, great for everyone.
Let me play you a clip of New York Times columnist David Brooks on Face the Nation this weekend. He was asked if the Republican Party was now much like it was in 1964 when Johnson swamped Goldwater.
World of pain, a generation of pain. 64, it was so much better than now. In 64, they had a coherent belief system. They lost, they didn't persuade the American people about it, but they understood where they wanted to take the country. Now it's just a circular firing squad with everybody attacking each other and no coherent belief system, no leaders. You got half the party waiting for Sarah Palin to come and rescue them, the other half waiting for Bobby Jindal, the Louisiana governor, to come rescue them, but no set of beliefs. Really a decayed conservative infrastructure. It's just a world of pain.
So he says this is much worse than the famous rout in 1964. You got half the party waiting for Sarah Palin to come rescue them, the other half waiting for Bobby Jindal, but no set of beliefs, really a decayed conservative infrastructure. Do you agree with that?
Boy, that's pretty depressing, isn't it? Boy. Well, I agree with parts of it. He makes. I hope he's overstating the case. We certainly do see the example of what he was using—that circular firing squad of people going out there and shooting their own. And that, those things just don't benefit anybody. They don't benefit the party, and in the bigger scheme of things, they don't benefit the country. So at the end of the day, what needs to be done is the party needs to sit down and say, what is our belief system, what is our structure, and how are we going to go forward, not just for the benefit of the party. That's, you know, I'm not in this, I don't run for office just to say, how can I strengthen the Republican Party? At the end of the day, the goal is, can we come up with belief systems in a party structure that benefits the country?
So do you think the belief, well, let me play you a clip, actually, of Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, who has his own thoughts about the belief structure within the party.
Okay.
When the Republican Party is no longer the party of fiscal conservatism, when we start defending spending that we would have rightfully criticized on the other side, whether it's earmarks or growth in discretionary spending or new programs that we never would have tolerated if the other side had proposed it, then clearly I would argue that we've lost our way, we've lost the reason that we stand as fiscal conservatives.
Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's why it was so frustrating for some of us in the party on the issue that we're talking here about the bailout. It should have been anathema for the Republican Party, whether the president or our leadership, to come out and say that the solution to the economic crisis was this $700 billion bailout of Wall Street, as they called it. We should have had a coherent and unified position on it. We didn't. You saw how the votes took two votes to do it and a lot of arm twisting. That should never have been the case. And likewise on the other issues we've been talking about here as well, the auto bailout and the like, we should be unified on these things because there is one way of thought that could accomplish a positive for the country.
Well, here's one more, okay. And this is from the governor's meeting in Florida yesterday. Utah Governor John Huntsman, a Republican, kind of taking the other tack, okay. Which is to say, a lot of people in the Republican Party are arguing that the party just needs to be more conservative and strayed from its conservative roots with right. Big spending bills yeah. under Bush and things like that. There's another part of the party that says it's too rigid and too ideologically rigid and trying to appeal to too narrow a demographic. And here's Governor Huntsman on that.
If we're not able to identify the changing demographic in this country and the needs of that changing demographic in terms of the issues that really matter, education and health care and quality of life and jobs, then we're going to lose, and we're going to keep losing big time.
Not able to identify the changing demographics in this country. Now, that seems to imply doing more for Latino voters, which the party lost in a big way, younger voters who abandoned the party in a big way.
Yeah.
Do you think that the party has become too ideologically rigid? You're a social conservative, but we see younger voters walking away from things like abortion and gay rights as defining conservative voting issues, at least in this election.
Yeah. Well, when I hear that clip, this is what I hear is that the Republican Party has done a bad job of relating to the changing demographics and identifying with the particular issues of the day. And that is probably accurate. In a lot of ways, you could say the party has been, as the old saying goes, fighting the last battle or the last war. That's not to say that we've become too rigid on a lot of these things, because just as we discussed a moment ago, our party is shooting at each other because we're a party made up of a whole bunch of different positions on a number of these issues, and we're trying to come together and say anything but being rigid on it. We're going out in a lot of different directions. So he may be wrong on that analysis, but he's right on the analysis that we're not relating back to the issues of the day. I think we can do both. I think we can do a better job of saying, look, this is what concerns America the most today, health care, education, so on and so forth. Now, as a conservative Republican, this should be our position to achieve what the Americans want, health care that is good for all Americans, an education system that parents are confident of sending their kids to, and the like. How do you achieve that? I believe there is a conservative approach to achieve that, and that's what we need to articulate.
All right. Congressman Scott Garrett, getting kind of lonely as a Northeast Republican. I don't know what those lunches are going to be like, but there you go, into the opposition, into the next Congress, and into the lame duck session where some stuff's definitely going to come up. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, I thank you that you still talk to me, even though there are only a few of us left.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now, low interest rates, easy money, and malleable accounting rules got us into this mess, says James Grant of Grant's Interest Rate Observer. And they're using low interest rates, easy money, and malleable accounting rules to get us out. We'll talk to James Grant of Grant's Interest Rate Observer about the economy in a minute.